Welcome to Deadly Departed. The do's, don'ts, and dangers of afterlife communication. This show discusses all aspects of afterlife communication, grief and grieving, the paranormal, and of course, parapsychology. There's real stories, scientific discussion, and most of all, real learning from paranormal experts and researchers. Here's your host, author of Deadly Departed, renowned evidential medium and spirit interventionist, Jock Brokaas.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jock, your host of Deadly Departed. Welcome to another episode. Today's a very exciting day for me, especially because the gentleman that I'm bringing off needs no introduction, but of course, as soon as you hear his name, you're going to know exactly what we are talking about. Welcome to Deadly Departed, Nick Pope. How are you?
I am great. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Good to be on.
No, it was awesome. And you know, for those of you who might not know Nick Pope, Nick is a leading expert globally throughout the world in UFO phenomena and investigated UFO phenomena for the British military, which we both had a connection with, and he also endorsed the very first book that I had out. So thank you, Nick. It's been a long time since we've spoken. So let me get right into it, Nick. What did you have an interest in UFOs, you know, since you were younger? How did you get into this field?
Quite by accident. I was a civilian employee of the British Ministry of Defence, and you get posted around every few years. In 1991, I was due for a move. A particular manager who I knew because we had worked together when I'd been seconded into the Joint Operations Centre during the first Gulf War, he had a vacancy coming up, and he asked whether I would be prepared to move into it. And I said, "What's the job?" And he said UFOs. So I had no interest in the subject, no knowledge, hadn't even heard of Roswell, no beliefs either way. To me, this was just another, civil service posting. Little did I know that, you know, 30 years on, I'd still be captivated by this topic.
You know, Nick, when you first got into it, I mean, I obviously know what it's like in the British military. You get told where you're going, there's a job there. And I know it's very similar in the Ministry of Defence. You don't really have much of a choice. You just do the job that you're getting told. But what, you know, when you got into this side of things, did you come from it from, okay, I'm totally skeptical of this. This is not where I want to be. Or did you really get thrown right into it and find out that, wow, this is something that I can really get into for the next God knows how long?
Well, I had mixed feelings, to be honest. I part of me thought I knew the sorts of postings that the young, ambitious high flyers like myself were after, and the sorts of things that we were after were the jobs in the minister's private office, handling the diary, the parliamentary schedule, that sort of thing. And you know, so top of the tree on the wish list were the private office jobs, then secretariat overseas commitments, policy jobs like that. A little bit of disappointment that I hadn't managed to get one of those plum jobs. Obviously, knowing that UFOs were going to be a big part of what I was doing, there was part of me that thought, well, my goodness, this, I suppose, is going to be quite interesting and exciting, and what a job. I mean, most people didn't even know that the MOD had this position. No. But I thought, like everyone else, I'll do my 3 years. I'll try and do the job to the best of my ability, whether it was the one I particularly wanted or not. And hopefully at the end of that posting, I'll get promoted, which I did.
You did very well out of it, actually. Now, let me ask you just a very blunt question, Nick. You know, did you believe in UFOs before you went in?
I didn't, which is probably the best mindset to go into that job having. I think if I'd gone in as a wide-eyed believer, I think it would have skewed my research and investigation. And I'm not sure they would have wanted me. And now, that's not to say that if I'd gone in as a complete debunker, that the same problems wouldn't have arisen in regards to the fact that you never want to do a conclusion-led investigation. So you want to go into a UFO investigation really with an open mind and go where the data take you. What you don't want is to go in either like, wow, I hope this is aliens, or, you know, there's a zero chance of this being anything other than aircraft lights. Both those mindsets are wrong. So in some respects, I think knowing really nothing about the subject, coming in with a fresh sheet of paper, so to speak, a fresh approach, new perspective, was the best of both worlds.
Now, when you went into the post, Nick, did it hit you with like, Nick, here you go, here is a load of case files of sightings and possible phenomena that we've seen, or was your desk empty and it was a case of we're waiting on the first thing happening?
Well, it's always an events-led job, at least insofar as the investigations, the newly reported cases are. You don't know on any given day, and I didn't know on day one, whether I was going to have a sudden wave of sightings, so multiple reports, or as sometimes happened, a quiet period where you go for a few days with nothing. That's not to say you're ever sitting there with nothing to do. Firstly, I had other duties apart from UFOs. I had some responsibilities in relation to updating, I think, NATO war books. I had some duties which were concerned with reading and security vetting manuscripts written by people who had been involved in the Gulf War. That was just beginning to come in. I had some of the big joint civil and military exercises we did with marvelous names. You probably remember them. Things like Wintex and Cymex.
Oh, yes.
And Purple Warrior and Purple Monarch. Those...
The names always tickle me. They're amazing with the names that they come up with. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. So it was a mixed bag, but behind me, literally behind me in the filing cabinets, were UFO files going back years. So, So even if there were no fresh reports coming in, one of the first things I needed to do was to read myself into the backstory.
You know, it's almost like going back into a cold case, isn't it? You're investigating a cold case.
It is exactly like that. And indeed, I used that exact phrase for a number of cases, like the Rendlesham Forest incident, where it did not happen on my watch, but where I felt that we had missed some important information, poor information sharing between the US and the UK.
Yeah.
Jurisdictional confusion, probably because of the NATO Status of Forces Act and all the memoranda of understanding. So I went back and did a cold case review on Rendlesham Forest, on a number of other cases. So, and funny, actually, that police mindset, in a later posting, I actually worked with a lot of military cops.
Right.
And the mindset that you need to go into a UFO investigation, it's not a million miles away from a police investigation. Number one, identify and interview the witnesses. Number two, locate, secure, and analyze the evidence.
Do you know, was Rendlesham your first big case, or was there a one before that that made you kind of sit up and find the missing pieces?
Well, it happened before my time on that particular desk, so I did not handle the original investigation. I guess as I went back through the files, I mean, a number of cases leapt out at me. I mean, going back to the Second World War, even some of the so-called Foo Fighter sightings that particularly Bomber Command were sending into the Air Ministry, those files were fascinating. There was a wave of sightings in 1952 associated with the big NATO exercise operation main brace, sightings over, for example, RAF Topcliff in Yorkshire.
Oh, yeah.
Number of other bases. West Frew, 1967. So we had over the years a number of, I guess you'd almost call them flagship cases that I looked at, often radar visual cases where we had, for example, our own pilots seeing things, sometimes chasing things, trying to capture them with gun cameras, simultaneously being tracked on military radar, often performing speeds and maneuvers that seemed beyond the cutting edge of anything we had at the time. So those are the sorts of things that attracted my attention.
Now, just jump back to what you said. You said that you found, when you were investigating these cold cases, for want of a better name for them, you found that there was lack of communication between authorities, between governments and things. Do you think that's possibly still the case?
It's very much still the case. Now, I was referring specifically to the so-called special relationship, where the US and the UK are supposed to be seamless on so many defense, national security, diplomatic, foreign relation type issues. And yet, on UFOs, we're not. And we see that bringing it bang up to date, we see it now. We see it with, for example, the fact that in the US in June, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence sent Congress a report saying that UFOs are a flight safety threat and a possible national security challenge. Then on 30th of June, the Minister of State at the Ministry of Defense, Baroness Goldie, gets up in the House of Lords and says, no, we're not going to reopen investigations here in the UK. So there's a total disconnect.
Disjoint. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Disconnected from it. Do you think that we, in Britain, that we should definitely bring this back to government investigation and actually, you know, set up either your old unit or a new unit again?
Yes, very much so. But I think with a fresh perspective, I think that I did a good job, as did the various people that came before me and came after me. But the program was terminated in 2009. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We know a lot more now from what's going on in the US than we ever did at the time. And I think what we need to do is reconstitute a UFO program, but with different terms of reference, learning from what the United States military intelligence community has been doing for the last few years, liaising with, for example, the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force that the US government now has embedded in the Office of Naval Research. I mean, the Ministry of Defense needs to be getting alongside the people that have actually done this. But what's happening is that they're just the people, the civil servants who are briefing the Minister of State to stand up in Parliament and say, well, there's no threat. We're not going to open the X-Files. The only thing they've been doing for the last few years is Freedom of Information Act requests. Yeah. So they are not subject matter experts. So it is scandalous in a way that they're advising the minister on this issue when the United States government has much more up-to-date information. And as far as we know, the UK is not getting alongside them on that.
We seem to be very, very much late to the party. And I've noticed over the years since I've been in the US as well, when you talk UFO and this type of phenomena, an aerial phenomena that's unidentified, we immediately think of everything being in the US because that is where the intelligence seems to be driven. That is where the information and the knowledge is. But we have just as much as you know from your cases in the past and from what's happening in sightings. It's just as important throughout the world and especially in the UK as well. So there's definitely a massive disconnect here between these governing forces to share their information and their knowledge, because we seem to be well late to the party at the moment.
Yes. I mean, I get that a lot of this is highly classified and deeply compartmentalized and extremely sensitive, not least because governments for years said, no, no, we're not interested in this, we're not investigating. So, of course, there's a little bit of a hit that you have to take when it comes out that you are. And actually, I think the US government has sidestepped that very neatly. Yeah. And of course, people are really now, they're not in a way taking them to task for the fact that Congress and the media and the public were misled for decades on this. Everyone's kind of forgotten that, moved on. Yeah. And, you know, fair enough. If Congress doesn't want to hold them to account, so be it. But what they are doing, of course, is focusing on these U.S. Navy sightings. I think most people have seen those videos taken with forward-looking infrared cameras from F-18 Super Hornets. Mm. Most people have seen some of the intelligence community people who were involved in investigating that sort of thing. People like Lou Elizondo speaking out. They've seen some of the radar operators, some of the pilots themselves are now on the record with this. In Congress, both in the Senate and the House, the various intelligence committees, armed forces committees, armed services committees, and the various subcommittees, all engaged on this now, particularly the Senate Intelligence Committee, people like Marco Rubio, really gripping this. And the UK needs to do the same.
Yeah, and it's not happening. Do you think, though, that with the recent disclosure that we've had, that there's, I want to say, do you think that we're blindsided in a certain aspect of it? Because, you know, from all the phenomena that was released or the cases that were released, they literally poo-pooed most of them and said, well, there is still no definitive answer, and we can only say that there's one case that we can perhaps put a label on. Do you think there's a disjoint in that disclosure they released?
There is. And of course, one of the big criticisms of the ODNI preliminary assessment when it came out was the fact that it's pretty much ignored the nigh on 80-year backstory of the modern UFO phenomenon. And they just, as you know, they said, well, look, we can't look at everything, but we'll take, I think it was 144 comparatively recent cases, not involving the public, pretty much exclusively
to the military.
Military cases. Mm-hmm. And we'll do a deep dive on them. And I understand why they did that. I mean, resources are limited, and it makes sense that you concentrate on your best and most recent cases. And what I think, so I think in one respect, it was unfortunate that they ignored a lot of the history.
Yeah.
But my goodness, actually, I was quite encouraged by the preliminary assessment because it made it very clear. I mean, the headline conclusions included, for example, the statement that most of the objects investigated seemed to be solid, structured objects and not, say, weather phenomena or a glitch on the radar. And one of the most critically important passages in the whole report was where it said these things are detected simultaneously across multiple platforms. Radar, forward-looking infrared, electro-optical.
So it's not just one person say, I seen it, and then they log it down. There is a continuity and a connection between various platforms.
Exactly. Yeah. Weapon seekers, electro-optical, and so on.
Because if we followed everything that comes out, even in the public, it would be crazy, because no matter what anybody sees in the sky, or even in visitations, it tends to get blown out of proportion. So I think it is very important that our organizations respectively just look at from the military and strategic point of view, because then it would just be total noise continually.
Although I have to say, we got into big rows on that very question at the Ministry of Defense, because actually, when we were talking to the intelligence people about this, they said, look, you know, there's two ways you can do this. There is the way that we've just discussed, which is quickly filtering out all the kind of obvious, you know, aircraft lights and weather balloons and meteors and things like that. And really focusing in on your good cases, radar visual sightings, pilot sightings, things like that. But there was another faction in intelligence who said, no, 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 that's not the way you should do it. You never ignore data in this business. So even if you think, well, this is probably just Mr. or Mrs. Smith out walking their dog, seeing a vague light in the sky, put it into the system. You know, get as many data points as you can, because you never know what's going to prove to be important. You never know what patterns are going to emerge when you have enough data points to look at. So we got into some quite heated discussions this.
So let me just, because we talk about aerial phenomena and you know, phenomena that we see within our military and strategic operations and things, but is there any is there anything in the claims where people are saying that they're having direct connection, or they're having phenomena, or they're having abductions? I mean, is there a military interest in that side of thing, do you think? I mean, just from your perception or your...
Well, when I was doing the job at the Ministry of Defence, we got those sorts of reports, sure. We didn't get that many of them, because I think people are disproportionately more likely to report those sorts of things to civilian UFO research groups. Bear in mind, a lot of the people, a lot of the public think that we in the Ministry of Defense were part of a cover-up on this. And very often when I spoke to people in the UFO community, or when I sort of randomly polled the public, you would get told things like, well, why should I tell you? You already know. And why should I report to people who are part of the conspiracy and part of the cover-up? But setting that aside, yeah, we did get the reports. They were of interest. To be honest with you, there's not much you can do with those sorts of things compared to a radar visual case, or compared to a case where you have photos and videos where intelligence community imagery analysts can take a look, where you've simply got someone saying, I'm in contact with an extraterrestrial intelligence, maybe telepathically, maybe channeling, maybe someone claims to have been abducted. There's much less that you can do with that sitting within government than as I say, a pilot sighting with radar and with videos. But yeah, sure, we looked at them.
Do you think our governments are coming from a place of I suppose it's disjointed, really, a place of fear, like they're fearing what they don't know in case there's this whole, you know, this tomorrow's world or this whole alien attack invasion thing? Or do you think it's mainly just, you know, from their intelligence and their knowledge point of view? Do you think there's a deep-seated fear within government institutions to the UFO issue?
I'm not sure there's fear so much as part embarrassment that there is something in our airspace and has been for decades, but until we recently started maybe looking properly and looking, you know, with better technology, that we'd missed a trick. So there's embarrassment. And one of the big things in the recent report to Congress was an intriguing hint that we might already have a lot of really important data on this, but that a lot of it gets filtered out, for example, by the standard filter programs that you have on various radar systems. But I mean, just before the end of the year, former Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe did a TV interview where he said, look, you know, he dropped into the conversation that there's military satellite imagery of these things. So I think going back to your question, part of it's embarrassment that these things have been there, but we just haven't been looking properly. But part of it is the standard government way of looking at a lot of things through the lens of what are the threats and what are the opportunities. And the military in particular sometimes will define threat as capability times intent.
Yeah.
So when you look at the UFO phenomenon, capability has a very high value, but you can't define or evaluate threat because you have no value for intent. Because it's, we don't know, to borrow Lou Elizondo's phrase, we don't know who's behind the wheel. Is it Russia? Is it China?
That was my next question. Exactly. That was my next question. You know, is there, you know, what are our foreign, what are other foreign governments doing? You know, can some of this phenomena be down to them? And this big question, is it really then UFO from alien type sources beyond our stratosphere, if you like? And, you know, is this just intelligence games from other governments?
Well, I think, again, one of the important things in the report to Congress was the statement that there is no single neat solution to the UFO mystery. So all the points that you mention in your question, they're not mutually exclusive. So people, it's not a question of if it's Russia, it can't be China, or if it's extraterrestrial, you know, some of it can't be our own United States tech. Yeah. So I think all of these things go on to the table. Extraterrestrial hypothesis, our own technology being blind tested against one part of the military by another, foreign adversaries like Russia or China, and other things too. So, I mean, in all seriousness, as you may be aware, but maybe not everyone watching and listening, I don't know, but there, for many years, have been people both in the US and the UK whose line has been, we shouldn't investigate UFOs, not because of some hard-nosed scientific skepticism, but because of a deep-seated fundamentalist religious belief that
yes,
this phenomenon might be demonic.
Which is actually, yeah, leads into quite a nice segue, because yes, the problem that we have in religion is religion are thinking that this is a demonic thing and it's not coming from technology, from alien life forms, or from other governments. So where do you stand in this whole, I want to break this down into two levels, PSI phenomena and possibly religious type phenomena.
Well, let me take the second first, as we started off with religion.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think a lot of this goes back to a passage in the book of Ephesians where it describes Satan and it uses the language. Now, of course, it varies according to which translation you look at, as a lot of things do. But the phrase is used, the prince of the power of the air. And going back decades, a number of people in government, military, the intelligence community have looked at that passage in Ephesians. I think it's book 2, chapter 2, or whatever it is. But and they've said, look, maybe the UFO phenomenon is demonic. And if it is, we ought not to engage with it, because that then feeds it, it gives it energy.
Mm.
Now, I don't happen to agree with that approach, but that's not the point. The point is that people in government have, and some still do, believe that. And Lou Elizondo has talked about how some of the pushback he had from the Pentagon was because of that sort of mindset. And on one occasion, he tells the story of how he briefed a very senior officer in the Pentagon, and that officer said, well, you know, when did you last read your Bible?
Hi there, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much if you have purchased Deadly Departed. It means a lot to me. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my work. And if you haven't bought Deadly Departed yet, then consider buying Deadly Departed. You can get it on Amazon or you can get it in any bookstore, and you can show proof of purchase and join my closed group. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at any time at Spiritual Medium if you have a question, and I will answer it. Have a wonderful day, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you once again. God bless. One of my specialities is in, as you know from my years of being a medium and things, is in the demonic realms and understanding that. And my perceptions, as I would say, ladies and gentlemen, is that the demonic certainly don't need solid aircraft to run around in. This is an intelligence that's way beyond us in a spirit form. So I don't see, this is the problem that we have, is we have then religious texts that intimate that there's a possibility of this technology or this being involved. But again, it's lack of understanding or lack of discernment in certain respects of that aspect of it. So there seems to be a massive disconnect there as well. And religion, I think, is causing us to make so many assumptions on the UFO phenomena.
I think so. And then you can flip that and say that, of course, you have ancient astronaut theory where a lot of people, because of, you know, hugely popular TV shows like Ancient Aliens,
which you speak on. Exactly. And I love it. I love it.
But people, I guess, ancient astronaut theorists believe that much of our religious belief was inspired by extraterrestrial visitation, and that these extraterrestrials were misperceived as gods, and that a lot of human religion and creativity is something that we then did in homage to these gods who, according to ancient astronaut theory, are not divine at all, but are, you know, flesh and blood biological entities like ourselves that just happen to evolve on a different planet orbiting a different star. So there's a lot to unpack there. And then of course you get into the whole psi business, and then you get a lot of people saying, and I think, you know, it's not, I'll be honest with you, it's not my area of expertise, but you get a lot of people saying, you know, I don't think you'll ever even understand the UFO phenomenon unless we factor in, for example, the mind, consciousness, and those sorts of debates. But in a situation where we can't even get agreement on what consciousness is, it's not going to help.
I have to say about Ancient Aliens, the show that you're on with the rest of the guys, it's quite compelling. In terms of their argument that they put forth for this perception of being or the hypothesis of it, it does make you think. It is quite compelling. I mean, it does make you look at religion in a completely different light. It does make you look at the UFO phenomenon in a completely different light. And the ancient astronaut theory makes you think again. It's quite a compelling argument for all of these experiences that we've had through the years, or thousands of years.
Yes, and I mean, no TV series that's run, I think, as Ancient Aliens has now for 12 years, over 14 or 16 seasons, depending on how you count the mid-season break. No series is that popular without having tapped into something fundamental, I think, and something deeply profound that a lot of people are interested in and believe.
Do you think, you know, with you mixing from your Ministry of Defence days and then from what you've done, after that life in there and being on Ancient Aliens, has your perceptions or your belief changed in any way?
Well, I think my beliefs are always evolving. I mean, I think as everyone's should. I think it's very dangerous when people just have a fixed opinion and stick to that and defend it, because things change. I mean, in the relation to the UFO phenomenon, new information is always coming out. So I'm always refining my views. In some cases, which I thought were quite interesting, maybe I say, well, perhaps that's not quite as exciting as we first thought. Maybe some cases that I didn't pay much attention to go the other way. So my views are always evolving. I think that one of the ironic things is that those of us who've looked at this topic from within government are often far less certain about what we're dealing with than people out in the UFO community who, I mean, the number of times, and I'm talking about skeptics and believers alike, but the number of times you'll almost literally get someone pointing a finger in your face and telling you, I know what it is, I know what's going on. And I'm looking at them and thinking, well, that's odd because we didn't know and we did this in
government. We still don't know.
No. So if in answer to your question, I think sometimes the evolution of my belief has taken me to a place of greater uncertainty. And someone asked me, I did a couple of months ago, I was on a 3-hour UFO special that coincided with this report, and it was simulcast on, I think, Discovery, Travel, and Science. And right at the end, Josh Gates, who was the host, he turned to all the panel, so the people like George Knapp,
yeah,
Jeremy Corbell, and Jim Semivan, and a number of others. And he turned to me and he said, Nick, I'm going to put you on the spot. Yeah, we've talked about a lot of this. What do you think it is? And I looked at him and I said, you know what? Maybe it's something we don't yet have the conceptual awareness to imagine or the words to describe. So that was my answer. But you know, my point is that when we're talking about all these phenomena,
yeah,
whether it's gods, devils, angels, demons, aliens, whatever it is, these are just labels. These are just our words, our interpretation shaped through the lens of our personal belief system,
yes,
our culture, our including our pop culture.
Yeah.
And so who's to say that the reality of the phenomenon or phenomena is anything like that? I'm reminded of the late John Mack, who looked at, of course, alien abductions, and he was professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. And he said, a lot of these people, they report something and they say, oh, it's like a medical experiment. You know, they put you on the table and they take samples. And then he looked at the audience and he said, even if that's true, we don't know that it is a medical experiment. All they're saying is it's like a medical experiment.
It's perception.
But how can we get inside, if this is what we're even dealing with, how can we get inside the mind's eye of an extraterrestrial? We can't even figure out sometimes what our partners are thinking, or our friends or our work colleagues, or one nation can't figure out the motivations of another when it comes to diplomacy. How could we hope with our anthropocentric view to figure out the other?
It's really interesting, actually, because it's I've always maintained that the labels we give are only temporary. It's even from my side of things and understanding or teaching about demonic or afterlife or things, these are perceptions and labels that we give. And I tend to try and not, you know, give these labels because we don't know enough from the evidence that we've got of what is true. You know, there is a real truth, and at the moment we're running through total perceptions. And I think that's very important to note, that, you know, what they were doing is based on a perception. And even I think with the, you know, Area 51 or all these theories of how many aliens that we have in captivity and things like that, again, this is all, it's like Chinese whispers that changes a lot. But, you know, I'm going to put you on the spot as well. Do you know of I would say maybe phenomena or technology that we have definitely got from another source that is beyond this world?
No, I don't. But what I do know is that in some government documents, like the declassified final report of the Ministry of Defence study project Condyne, and referenced also by former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid in a 2009 letter that he sent to the Deputy Secretary of Defence, there is reference to technological spin-offs that would derive from a better, fuller understanding of the UFO phenomenon, whatever its true nature. And they mention things like directed energy, weapons, signature management and reduction. So some people might look at that and say, this is all about reverse engineering alien tech. And others might be a little cautious and say, no, it's just that this phenomenon or phenomena, whatever it or they are, might help us figure things out. I don't know the answer. I mean, what I do know, hand on heart, is that I have not seen, for example, literally crashed.
Yeah, and spaceships. I was going to ask you, have you actually seen or witnessed the phenomena yourself in your career?
I haven't. I've never seen a UFO. Well, aside from one episode of Ancient Aliens, where we did briefly see a strange light in the sky, actually. So maybe that counts. I think looking back...
Yeah, that counts. That's good.
Lots of people see lights in the sky that they can't identify. I'm not saying it was an extraterrestrial spacecraft. So I don't think I can claim to have seen a UFO.
Yeah, because we had a question that had actually come in and in our group and said they were going to be on. They said, how many aliens is there? And I thought, well, how long is a piece of string? So Chanda Broderick, who actually sent in that question, we can't classify, surely we can't even classify the technology or, classify the types of aliens that there are. I mean, we just don't know. And, this is important.
Speaking to that question, some years ago, of course, the radio astronomer Frank Drake came up with his famous Drake equation to try and calculate how many communicable civilizations there might be in our one Milky Way galaxy, not the whole universe, just in our galaxy.
Seems impossible.
And there are various solutions to the Drake equation that people have postulated, around about 10,000 communicable civilizations. Recently, with the discovery of exoplanets, suggesting that many, many more planetary systems than we thought have, stars rather, have planetary systems. So people have upped the value of the Drake equation and maybe suggested 20,000 communicable civilizations. Wow. Now, a year and a half ago, there was a physics journal that published a paper, and they were real rare earthers. So they said, well, we're going to be much more strict with our criteria. And their estimate was that there were only 36 civilizations in our galaxy. And then I thought, well, that's a real lowball figure compared to the. But then I did the math. And then I said, but wait a minute, that still means, given the number of galaxies in the universe, that if you extrapolate, we are talking about 72 billion civilizations. I don't think the human mind can really conceive of such things. So the answer to that question, in a sense, your answer of how long is a piece of string is, but look, if there's just one other civilization, we're in game-changing territory, obviously.
Absolutely. Do you think there'll ever come a time, Nick, that we will really make a fundamental connection with another civilization? Or do you think it's still going to be elusive for the next 100 years or so? I mean, from what you've gathered and the intelligence that you've gathered over the years, are we getting closer or further?
Oh, we're getting much closer. There's been a real picking up of the pace. But more than that, we are about to get in our hands the tools that may help us prove for once and for all that we're not alone. And I'm talking specifically about the James Webb Space Telescope and the Square Kilometer Array Radio Telescope. So what my point is that the next generation of telescopes, both optical and radio, will, I think, show us a very crowded cosmos. So the good news, I think, is that ours is likely to be the generation that will make that profound, game-changing discovery that it's not just us.
I was asked another question from Kev, whether to, and I don't, you know, how this would sit. Does NASA also need a disclosure? Do you think NASA actually have technology and information that they've held back from either private sources or governments? Do you think that NASA have a lot to answer for in terms of this investigation at UFO phenomena and things?
Well, I think it's only very recently that NASA have pivoted on this issue, got alongside the US military, and really thought for years, NASA's view was, yes, we corporately believe in extraterrestrial life, but life out there, not life down here. But my goodness, if you have not seen it, go and look at the speech that former Senator Bill Nelson, who now heads up NASA, gave at University of Virginia Center for Political Study on October 19th. It's all over the internet. People like Chris Mellon and Lou Elizondo have posted it. I've posted it too on my Twitter.
Yeah, I've seen that on your Twitter. And I'll link it actually under in the show notes. I'll actually link that for people to go and see as well, as well as in the magazine as well.
Yes, but I mean, the point is, Bill Nelson didn't even get asked about this. Just as the interviewer was wrapping up, he said, well, wait a minute, Larry, before I go, we haven't even discussed extraterrestrial life and UFOs and these Navy videos. And I would urge anyone who hasn't seen that, listen to what he says. Look at his facial expression. And when the host asks him to whether he thinks it's Russia, China, or extraterrestrial, he says, I don't have an answer to that. But then watch what he does next. Because I think he kind of lets the cat out of the bag.
He lets the cat out of the bag. Yeah.
Yeah.
So go and watch it, guys, and let us know what you think of what you see from this. So Nick, what's now, you know, what's for you over the next few years? What have you got planned in terms of your work? I know you do you've done a lot of books, and we'll link some of your books and stuff, which are brilliant books. But I know you consult a lot for organizations, but what have you got planned for the next few years?
Well, I see myself really now that I've left government, not so much as an investigator anymore, but as a communicator on this topic. And I'm fortunate in that I have a platform on mainstream news media, whether it's writing for various newspapers or whether it's appearing on various TV news shows. But the media, when stories on this subject break, as they are breaking with increasing regularity, I'm one of a small group of government insiders who the media come to on this. So I will very much continue in that role and do everything that I can to keep this subject in the public eye, in the media spotlight, to carry on, you know, with the message that this is both interesting and important. It's something that needs to be looked at as a defense and national security issue. Not saying that we're necessarily dealing with something hostile. We don't really know. And like I say, there's probably going to be no single answer. And if we're being visited by extraterrestrials, no single agenda. So I'm going to carry on doing what I do, keeping this front and center doing a little bit of work behind the scenes, using some of my old contacts to try and move things forward. And
you're a mouthpiece really for the public as well. I mean, really in bringing the information from one source to another that can be easily digestible.
Yes, and no one person is a sole voice on this. Yeah. So many people are working together, both inside government. I mentioned some of the committees that are working on this in Congress, but civilian researchers too, some of the journalists who are taking a real close look at this, Brian Bender at Politico, Ralph Blumenthal, Helene Cooper, Leslie Kane, who've done work with the New York Times on this, George Knapp, of course, KLAS, been at the center of a lot of this, Jeremy Corbell, you know, a lot of these people, doing a lot of work, Tim McMillan and some of his colleagues at The Debrief, the War Zone people, and this is the trouble. When you mention someone, you feel, oh, gosh, who have I forgotten?
You've got to mention everyone.
Someone's thinking, hey, what about me? My apologies to those I didn't name check, but there are so many people out there doing such good work in government, in the specialist military and aviation press, in the political press, other forums too.
That's awesome. I've got to mention a couple of people as well. I see that. My mother-in-law, Glenys Jones, who absolutely loves you and loves you on Ancient Aliens. She watches you all the time. So I'm giving her a shout out to my mother-in-law, who I love very much. She's one of your biggest fans, Nick.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Hi to you too. And keep watching Ancient Aliens. More new episodes in the pipeline. Lots of interesting things on the horizon.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there was going to be a new series and new things coming out, actually. And is there an ETA on that when it's coming out?
I have been doing some filming over recent weeks and months. I know there are new episodes in the pipeline. I don't have broadcast dates. And of course, it depends whether you're watching in the US, the UK, other parts of the world. So all I would say is keep watching your TV guide and keep watching the website. But there is more to come for sure.
No, I know this is probably not the forum to put this on, but I have to anyway, because obviously we both had connections with the British military and things. And I want to thank you for being my guest today. And guys, you guys that are listening out there, go and read Nick's books, follow him on social media. You can give you details in the end. But if you had a message to give our government back in the UK, a message now, what would it be?
It would be take another look at the data, get alongside the US government, who've been deeply involved in this for the last few years, and listen to what they have to say. Because if the US government has labeled this as a potential national security challenge that merits further work by the military and the intelligence community, the UK should be looking too. And why not? Even if you're skeptical, I would say this. It's the ultimate low probability, high impact scenario where the consequences, if just one of these cases turns out to be something more than just aircraft lights and weather balloons, the consequences are so immense that it makes sense to be sat at the table alongside the US, alongside other nations who are looking at this and giving it a proper look.
I would absolutely agree. We certainly don't want to be the last people at the party. We want to be in there at the very beginning, along with everybody else. Nick, thank you for being my guest on Deadly Departed. I know I asked you to come on Parawise. I know you're busy. Hopefully, we'll get you on that in the future. Should anything happen, your place is still available. But anything else that you want to say before we finish, Nick, to any of our listeners or anything out there?
No, just a greeting to you all and to remember, I guess, a couple of my favorite sayings with all of this. Firstly, the question of whether or not we're alone in the universe is one of the biggest and most profound questions we can ask, and we may be very close to getting an answer. And secondly and finally, always remember this. When it comes to UFOs, and other strange phenomena too. The skeptics have to be right every time. The believers only need to be right once.
I absolutely love that. I'm going to take that. I'm going to put some posts out with that as well. Get our marketing guys on that. That is phenomenal. Nick, thank you so much for being my guest. And I hope you will come back on again and we'll get into this even more. Guys, you've been listening to Deadly Departed. This is my guest, Nick Pope. Make sure that you follow him on his website, Nick Pope, and obviously on Ancient Aliens, and watch out for him on Twitter and making announcements. You certainly don't want to miss anything out. Nick, thank you once again, my friend.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Deadly Departed with renowned evidential medium and author Jock Brocas.
Jock Brocas.
If you like what you've heard, make sure to pick up a copy of the Deadly Departed book. Don't forget to share the episodes and send in your questions to us about anything paranormal and the afterlife. Tune in next time to Deadly Departed, the do's, don'ts, and dangers of afterlife communication.